Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Wrestling Art with Chris Things.
Do the hammer.
For another Wrestling Art with Chris Things. I am Chris Things, Brian, your host of this show. Wrestling Art, dude, your friend out here in podcast land. I'm stoked to be doing another episode. I've just haven't woken up. It's morning here in Australia, the day that the podcast is going to come out. And yeah, I've had a little bit of coffee. I'm still here in my dressing gown. Haven't quite gotten my business work clothes on yet, but you know, it is what it is. It's working from home life. But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm here to talk about some match of the week goodness with you. This is our match of the week special for the show, where I have my little old match of the week illustration that I've done, my favorite match that I happened to watch that week, and you know, we talk about that. We talk about the art. I'm very excited this episode. We've got Keeping It Strong Styles young boy Josh Smith back on the show. Kind of our signature token New Japan correspondent at this point. I really like that we've got a bit of a grouping of different, you know, different pals out there that'll come on and talk about these different match of the weeks when they end up being in their kind of neck of the woods. But yeah, I'm looking very much forward to having Josh on in a little bit. In the meantime, we've got our little old what's happening in the world of Chris Things intro monologue segment. Last time I spoke a little bit about the new book coming out in the near future, Way of the Blade, the AEW edition. Some of the greatest bloody wrestling matches in the history of AEW. I'm very stoked about that. I think we're inching closer towards a release date being announced in the very near future. As mentioned last time, I've just gotten to be reviewing sort of like a final proof of the book, and I've gotten a bit more excited about it. You know, I think you're all gonna have a lot of fun reading this one. I think it's a really fun sort of like interactive way that they've set it up. I think it works very similar to the first in it being like an awesome tabletop or coffee table book or, you know, bathroom book. You just pick it up every now and then, you flip to a page, you just read about that match, and it's a fun time. Got a bunch of other fun little surprises that Phil's squeaked in there for you as well. And yeah, it's very cool for me looking at, you know, these actual illustrations that I've contributed towards it, many of which were done, you know, over a year ago now. So there's a little bit of separation. So I look back at them and I'm like, oh, and I have a bit of a smile. And I'm like, oh yeah, that one came out pretty cool, actually. You know, sometimes there's ones where you might agonize over it a little bit at the time. And then, you know, you kind of are just like, oh, I guess it's done, whatever. And then you have a bit of space between it and you look at it with fresh eyes and you're like, ah, that's actually pretty sick. Others you look at and you just remember that frustration. But, you know, I assume that you guys wouldn't necessarily, you know, be able to see that frustration. So yeah, I'm very interested to see once it comes out what are people's kind of like favorite matches, favorite illustrations, what have yous. So yeah, very, very looking forward to that. And again, I think it really is a celebration of some really special moments in this you know, upstart company that's I guess really not an upstart anymore. It's been around for like 5 years, which is wild to say. But yeah, I think there's been some wonderful things throughout the early history of AEW, and one of them I really think is bringing back the beautifulness of the Crimson Mask and just the timeless you know, magic that is a great bloody wrestling match. I don't think that there's anything quite like that, you know, when blood is done in wrestling in just the right way, like the way it can heighten emotion, the way it can you know, get people more invested into a match. The visual element of it as well, you know, I've obviously done quite a lot of bloody wrestling art illustrations and artworks over my years as an artist, and I do love it, and you know, I really do think that there's something that is as gross as it sounds to some of you all about, you know, getting a broken off razor blade out of your wrist tape and you know, digging it into your forehead after having some painkillers to thin out your blood so you start bleeding. That might sound a little bit brutal and, you know, like it should be a thing of the past to some of you, but not to me. You know, from my days a million years ago and doing this wrestling thing, I really do, you know, I loved doing blade jobs. And I don't say that from like a masochistic point, I don't think. I think it's like how you know it can heighten your ability when it comes to storytelling and you know, getting some people emotionally invested in something. When done right, I think it's one of the best things in wrestling. So the idea that before AEW was around, that the blade was banned, you know, this has been a bunch of times over the years in WWF, WWE, Vince's blade ban. It's so dumb that you know, that this was taken away. So we're forever grateful to Tony Khan for bringing the blade back to big time, you know, American TV wrestling at the very least. I very appreciative of that. So stoked for the book. In addition to that, we have quite a few little things coming up. I'm traveling down to Sydney this weekend. You know, going back on the road to sell my wares. Got the big Lucha Fantastica show in Sydney on Saturday night. Jump on the events page, christhings.com.au/events. You can find out all the details. I got a daytime family-friendly show, so you can bring your kids along and enjoy all of the masked Lucha goodness as in a wholesome family manner. Or you can come to the nighttime show, where it gets a little bit raunchy. Yep, it gets a bit more adults only. There's tequila shots being poured out of the ring into people's open mouths. There's a sweet band, mariachi goodness, crazy characters and just hilariousness, and it's such a good time. It's a party. It's I really dig these shows, and I dig being able to be part of it. You know, I'm there with my little old art table, and yeah, the whole team do a fantastic job. Senor Fantastico puts on a wonderful show. Tremendous MC as well. I have a lot of fun at these shows. I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to traveling down there. So if you do come along, buddy, you know, come up, come have a chat. I'm there. Even if no one buys anything, I really dig the chat element of it and the connection. So yeah, have a chat. Have a flip through my print skis that I brought along. I think it should be a really fun time. I'm looking forward to it. And then the week after that, back in Brisbane on the 21st, we've got the second ever wrestling club with Chris Things. That is a new initiative that I've started, where I have a night at one of my favorite local pubs, Brewski Bar, where we have a special room set up downstairs. I got all my art on the walls. And we just come along, and I've curated a bit of a list of fun, weird, eclectic wrestling goodness for you. So we just hang out, we have some wrestling hangs together, you know, I'll bring a little fancy cheese platter along so you know, feel like it's a fancy evening. The best part, I think, is just the community element of us all being able to get together to enjoy this thing, you know, talk about it, riff on it. And then what we did last time, which I'll definitely continue this time, is you know, going around the room and asking everyone what their favorite match was. Because last time it was so heartwarming, everyone said a different match. And that made me just feel like this whole thing is so darn worth it. So I'm very excited for part two. This next Wednesday, I guess. Man, less than a week away. I better get working on this playlist. Shit. But please, if you're in the Brisbane area, come on down. Be part of the wrestling club community. It's a free evening as well. And Brewski always has some delicious food and beers on hand too. So please come on down. If you feel like buying some Chris Things art, well, boy, I can help you out with that as well. But all right, I think that's enough of this early part of the show. That's pretty good, I think, in terms of World of Chris Things segment. I think we're pretty well ready to go for the match of the week. Goodness. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. I have our latest match of the week guest on the line, young boy Josh Smith from Keeping It Strong Style. Thought the most appropriate person to be talking some G1 action. Welcome to the show, my dude.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again, Chris. I think this is my third appearance on the show, so kind of becoming a regular thing. I'm in the rotation.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I always look forward to our chats whenever I get to have you on. And I feel like you're really the authority when it comes to the New Japans on this network, at least, you know?
I guess so.
It's funny, we were just saying before we started recording, and it gave me the idea that we probably should start recording, you were like surprised that I was even actually like keeping up with this G1, and that was a fair point to say, because I don't think I've actually watched the G1 closely for years now, but for whatever reason this year's lineup made me a bit interested, because it seemed a lot more fresh than usual. There were some guys that I really wanted to see how they'd do, and it's been actually a super interesting tournament for me so far.
Well, that's in no way a slight towards you. Obviously, like, Chris, you're one of the sickos. You've been watching the entire G1 in its entirety for years and years and years and years. But, you know, I think it's only been the last few years that you've kind of gotten out of the habit of watching it, you know, the entire way through. So I assumed you were cherry picking like the best stuff, so I didn't even realize you were watching like that.
I mean, I'm not, when I say I'm watching the G1, I'm not watching the entire shows.
Oh, okay.
Like, I am cherry picking to an extent, but even so, you know, when you're cherry picking, that's normally at least, you know, 3 matches per show, and then you have quite a few shows to make it through. So,
sure.
Yeah, it's definitely a bit of a thing. But on a front that I do feel a bit more guilty on, you know, I feel a bit of a personal responsibility to be spreading the good word Noah. I haven't watched any N1 so far.
I've not heard great things about this year's N1, and they seem to be plagued with, you know, a lot of people getting hurt, a lot of injuries and stuff. So I'm not surprised that you're not watching the N1, because I think a lot of Western fans are not at this current time.
Yeah, I mean, I think I have heard some bright points in it, but main reason I'm not keeping up with the N1 is just because I'm so far behind in Noah. I'm honestly still up to like March or April in my Noah watching. So it is what it is.
Plus, they got a what's the dude's name from WWE in there.
Yeah, well, I was a little bit concerned about that too, but it sounds like they've actually been doing, I mean, not Briggs, but the other dude has been killing it.
That's what I was going to say. They got Briggs in there, and guy's a predator, so.
Yeah, I'm not very enthused to watch him. I still have enough of watching him from when Gabe was pushing him real hard towards the end of Evolve.
Oh, bro, I was going to the shows here in Ybor, and I had to sit through his title run. It sucked, yeah. and that was before we knew about his you know, outside activities that were revealed during Me Too, so you know.
Yeah. Man. Gabe, he in some ways you're like, oh, creative genius, and then you're like, oh, there also is that kind of that part of Gabe where you're just like, oh.
I don't blame him too much for that period, because they were already getting pretty much appropriated by WWE, and it was the dying days, and everyone kind of knew it.
Yeah. Yeah, I just have been getting a bit back into the classic days of Ring of Honor and my, you know, full nostalgia that I have for all of that good stuff. And yeah, I am very sad that you know, Ring of Honor doesn't really exist anymore. But man, they did have some awesome stuff back in the day.
They might come back, you know. Tony's working on this TV deal, and you know, they're talking about AEW presents Ring of Honor. That might be a thing, so we'll see what that looks like.
We will see what that looks like. yeah, man, stoked to be talking a little bit of G1 with you. G1's been an interesting one, because you know, you mentioned the injuries plaguing the N1. You know, I think the big story of this one for me has, you know, I didn't make any bones about my favorite dude who I thought has been the most exciting to watch in this year's G1, being Yuya Uemura. And you know, some amazing matches. You know, I still think the match today that we're going to be talking about, his match against Takeshita, is still my favorite match of the entire G1 thus far, of everything that I've seen. And man, heartbreaking that you know, he was the one that had to, you know, be cancelled out of the entire rest of the tournament with the arm injury.
Yeah, that was super unfortunate. I would say of that quote-unquote Reiwa class of guys, you know, the ones who sort of had that designation, he did the most to elevate his stock during this tournament. I'll tell you right now, myself and Jeremy Donovan from Keeping a Strong Style, we've been really, really high on Yuya Uemura going back to his Young Lion days, and we've always kind of been of the opinion that he's a future ace in the making. Now, his return from excursion hasn't really gone off without, you know, some hitches. So it's been a little underwhelming. But this G1 in particular has really been, you know, an elevation and an exercise in a guy maximizing his moments and maximizing his minutes and making the most of the opportunities given to him.
Yeah.
One quick thing before I kick it to you. This is how deep it goes for us. So we were at 3 years ago, actually almost literally to the day, we were in Los Angeles, myself, Jeremy Donovan, and then Chris Sampson was with us, and we watched Umora have his first post, you know, his first excursion match, and he actually got a pinfall in a multi-man tag match in Los Angeles, and the three of us erupted, like... like the World Series had just been won, or like a Super Bowl, like we just saw a world title challenge change. Like we freaked out, and it was just because this guy in the black trunks like finally got a pinfall victory for the first time. We happened to be there, so we've been on this ride for quite a while.
I love that so much. I mean, that there really is something to be said when you get invested in one of the young boys from their sort of class. And I was the same, you know, of that grouping. Uemura was always my favorite. You know, as soon as I saw that first time that he broke out the double overhook, bridging suplex, I was like, man, this guy is something special. So it's same with, you know, the Japanese fans. It's always a big thing when they come back from excursion. There is like, we remember being like so invested with him through the young boy days. So yeah, for sure, gets that first big win. You're like, fuck yeah!
Now I'll be honest. My favorite of that class is still Tsuji. I'm still a Tsuji guy, but I've always kind of seen Tsuji as being more like the Chono or the Naito of that group, like the guy who's gonna be, you know, he's gonna be up there, but he's not gonna be their ace. I think the guys that they have pegged to be ace are more like Umino or Umora, and the shooter days are, you know, given what's kind of being rumored to be transpiring backstage, like I don't know if the company is quite as high on his prospects in that same regard. So the door's probably right open for a guy like Uemura to step in and step up to the plate, kind of take over the mantle. Mm. And, you know, I think, I can't say if this is 100% true, but I think he was the youngest or one of the youngest G1 competitors in history at this point. So it was really unfortunate for him to have that arm injury at the very tail end of the G1 there.
Yeah, oh, for sure. Speaking of Umino, man, I was such a fan of him back in the day, and I don't know what it is. I don't know whether it's, like, losing the hair, whether what it is. Like, I've been watching a couple of his matches in the G1 this year, and aside from maybe... I feel like that Zach match was quite good, but... Aside from that, I have not been a big fan of Umino. I don't know. It's just not really doing it for me in this year G1.
The Gape match was pretty incredible, but that also kind of stemmed from real-world life occurrences kind of going on there, too. I don't normally plug outside podcasts, but I will say for anybody that's listening, if you're interested in some of the backstage ongoings with Umino, Super J-Cast, they had Fraser, who is a friend of mine. I talked to him, you know, personally. They had him on as a guest. He's literally been to every single G1 show on this tour live.
Damn.
And he's connected. He talks to quite a few of the wrestlers and office people at New Japan, and he kind of gave a lot of insight about what the backstage vibe is when it comes to Shota Umino right now. So if you haven't heard that, I would recommend listening to their interview with him, because it was a pretty eye-opening, pretty enlightening. It's not stuff that other people haven't already heard. I just don't think anyone had gone on record and like said it out loud.
So wait, what is the cliff notes on this?
Nepotism, people being down on Umino, having bad attitude, maybe not having the passion that he had, you know, when he was a young lion in the dojo, mistreatment of women, not necessarily being respectful in the office, all sorts of stuff.
Wow, dang. I'm going to have to check that out. Juicy.
Yep, and I mean, those are, I can kind of corroborate some of those things. I've heard some of those same things myself apart from that show, and I think others have too. So, yeah, interesting.
Yeah, man. I do feel that his excursion to the UK was a tough one. I don't know if, I guess, all sort of like these young lion excursions are, you know, quite difficult. But yeah, it really did sound like, from, you know, hearing stuff from friends in common, that he did do it kind of hard over there. So I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's post-pandemic or during the pandemic, so who knows, you know, what that looked like. I mean, I can't imagine that RevPro had tons and tons of resources to, you know, to accommodate these guys, you know?
Well, if it's proportionate to their production values. So actually, right before we started recording this, I went back and I actually watched the big match with Uemura against Tsuji, you know, for completionist purposes. And, you know, obviously that match was the big arm issue. But, you know, I was really happy that I watched it because, I mean, I don't know if it was like fighting through the struggle or whatever it was, but I really quite enjoyed that one. I mean, I don't actually know what part of the match, you know, where the injury happened, but, you know, it seemed pretty early on.
Yeah, absolutely. So basically what happened there, he went up for a frog splash. So they were kind of alluding to the idea of him using Tanahashi's finisher as his own. And he went for the, you know, for the high fly flow. And when he came down, I think he dislocated his wrist or elbow. And from that point on, he just lost feeling. He couldn't use that arm the remainder of the match. I think that my take on that match is that Uemura was for sure going over because they could have easily audibled and had Tsuji gone over. But I don't think the points would have worked out appropriately with the way they were booking the tournament. So even with the injury, Uemura had to go over. And I don't know what the planned finish was going to be, but they went to the finish where Tsuji goes for the spear, which is his finish, and then Uemura catches it into a crucifix and goes for the pin. And that was the same finish that they used at Wrestle Kingdom this year. So I think that they just called that on the spot. I don't think that was the original planned finish. And then if you recall, they fucked that up because I don't think he was able to hold on to the hook, and Tsuji came off the mat, and Red Shoes had to basically abandon the call. And then very shortly, they finished it on a small package. So yeah. I think that they audibled, did a new finish, fucked it up, and then just went to the small package from there. And like literally whatever it was they had planned, I think they had to scrap it all.
Yeah, I definitely got that vibe of him because I mean he just literally could not do like anything with his arms. And yeah, that first one where I was like, okay, this is a great sort of way to quickly finish it. But man, just that shoulder being off the mat. I mean, it was almost like so perfect, but then, you know, I mean, props for Red Shoes for noticing it.
Right.
But, man, he just looked like, motherfucker! But yeah, I really do think they covered quite well with the small package shortly thereafter.
Yeah, they definitely did. And up to that point, I really liked the match, and it was really heartbreaking. And one thing I think, even though, yeah, it's a situation that's unfortunate. I think that the fact that this kid got injured and was able to gut through it, and everyone kind of knows what happened to him and was aware of it, and for him to still finish the match and still get on the mic afterwards, knowing pretty much like he was crying, like actual real tears, and pretty much probably already knew that his tournament was fucked at that point. And I don't know what the final booking would have been in the B block, whether he was going to get through or not. I'm going to tell you, I think my best guess is he wasn't, just based on what I was seeing, but who knows, he could have. And for him to still like address the crowd and fire everybody up and send them off happy and do that through tears, I think that's still going to endear him to the audience and, you know, be something that they remember when he does return from that injury.
Yeah, I think so. I think in a way, I mean, I don't know. I don't know whether the plan was, you know, in my mind, I was like, he has to win the G1. He has to win the G1. I don't know whether that was the plan in reality. And if not, maybe it's better for Uemura in the long run to have had this really impressive, you know, look and then to, you know, be forced out So when he comes back, it's going to be a you know, massive deal.
Yeah, definitely. And there's a long history between him and Tsuji, and the fact that it occurred in that match in particular also, you know, there's something they can build off that as well. But this match with Takeshita that you picked was a barn burner. And, you know, I'll be honest, I don't know if I personally think it is the match of the G1, but it was the first time in this year's tournament where people were like, holy shit, this is special. This is really standout. And kind of just embodied what we classically have come to think of as like G1, you know, like we had some of those COVID year G1s that were not really quite what you would expect. And there were still some great matches, but because it was Naito and Tanahashi and Zack Sabre Jr. and guys that have been long established, sort of having great matches against common opponents that they've wrestled a million times, you weren't hearing the buzz of, like, say in 2013 when like Shibata and Ishii were doing their thing and, like, you know, kind of coming out the gates, or Hanma and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And this time, Uemura was like the first of these young guys to really have a defining elevated level match, and to do it with, in my opinion, I think I do think Uemura has an argument for MVP, but like for me, it's got to be Takeshita. That guy has been unreal in the B block this year, and I think he's the MVP of the whole tournament. And him and Uemura probably had one of his two best matches in the entire tournament.
Yeah, I mean, there's something to be said for, you could basically go through this G1 and just watch the Takeshita matches, and you'll pretty much see all the best matches of the tournament for the most part.
For the most part, yeah. I mean, there's been some really good ones in the A block, but the B block has been the Takeshita show. It's been kind of fucking crazy. I don't know what his contractual status is or what's going on with that, with him and DDT and Tony Khan, but if he were to find a way to make New Japan his home, he'd be ace, like, tomorrow.
Oh, he would be so useful as a guy to have there, because the crowd's really kind of, like, bought into him as well. I have my doubts how much more of him we'll be seeing in New Japan after this G1, but even if he was, like, a sometimes big show kind of guest player, I feel like that would still be a really good use of a guy like that. It just kind of, like, It's really unfortunate where you see what a guy like Takeshita in this environment is capable of, and then you compare what his output is able to be week in, week out in AEW.
Yeah, I mean, he's had some very good matches in AEW, like some really standout matches, but they don't mean anything because...
And they're so infrequent. Like, it's very rare that he even gets to be in, like, a, you know, a position where he's getting the time and spotlight to be able to put on that kind of performance, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, and I've said this many times on my show and on other platforms, and I think it's just the state of things. I don't think that Tony Khan or any Western booker outside of, like, maybe, say, ECW in its heyday, I think aside from them, they're the only people that have ever... And I don't even know if I would really consider them truly mainstream, if we're being honest. But, like, for the big two, for the WCWs, the AEWs, and the WWEs, they've never really been able to utilize non-English-speaking talent to the maximum of their ability, you know?
I mean, I always go back to Muda in NWA, early at WCW, you know, like that like 89 run of Muda has got to be, like, all-time for, like, getting the most out of a Japanese talent. But, I mean, Gary Hart's largely responsible for that with, you know, the promos and all that side of it, I guess.
That's part of it. And then just the novelty of the Great Muda character. There's never been anyone who was like him on national television, really. Yeah. I mean, Kabuki, but he's light years past what Kabuki had been.
Slightly flashier than Kabuki.
a little bit, you know. And then, you know, he had Sting to work off, and that stuff was just so, you know, it's funny nowadays, people will watch those matches, and they'll be like, 3.25, 3.5, and I'm like, those were industry-changing matches at the time.
Yeah, still mind-blowing for me to watch. I mean, I guess it's hard sometimes for some people to watch it with, like, the eyes of the day.
Right.
But I still adore any of that stuff.
But the thing with that run is, if you're really honest about it, 6 months. The guy was there for like 6 months, and then he would just kind of come back for one or two shows a year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much it. Like his entire reputation in the States was built off of a 6 month run on Excursion in, you know, Jim Crockett / WCW.
JTEX.
Yeah, the JTEX Corporation. but when it comes to like, you know, AEW, they've had quite a few really top-notch, you know, Spanish and Japanese-speaking talents, and they use them, they get them over, they're popular, but they can't get them to a next level because they don't know how to build the right creative to utilize them week in and week out in a meaningful way. And that's been the case for WWE as well. None of these companies know how to use non-English-speaking talents, and it's kind of, you would think it's normal, but if you think about it, it's really not. Like, how many, like, English-speaking talents have gone to Mexico or Japan and become, like, huge stars? Like, it's not that hard.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think really it's just about committing to it booking-wise, and there's this weird thing in American wrestling of that, like, whole... And I think it's so bullshit of, like, oh, well, we can't, you know, we can't get behind someone if they can't, you know... cut a you know promo in the same way as like our American guys can, and it's like that it's like a different appeal, like entirely. Like I don't understand like the idea of it's like, well, if he can't come out here and cut like a John Cena promo, then well, we can't strap the rocket to him. Like it's just ridiculous to me. But I mean, that's something I'll never understand about American wrestling and the priority of the, you know, promos and the scripted dialogue and all that nonsense.
Well, the one thing that I go back to is I've seen so many times throughout the last 20 years where the UFC and boxing have had some of their biggest superstars be non-English speaking talents. And what do? They give them a translator, you know? And I mean, sure, there's always that reliance on a manager to cut promos for them. But I don't really see why in 2024 you can't have Kazuchika Okada or whoever go out, or Takeshita go out there and cut an impassioned promo and then literally have someone translate it. Like, do we not have enough money in these, you know, $1 billion, $100 million companies to pay for a translator to get the talent over? Like, it works in boxing. It works in the UFC. That's still combat sport promotion. I don't know why they can't just do the same thing.
Yeah, I do not understand either. I don't know if they think people get bored by the time that they listen to that and then they change the channel, or who knows, but it is ridiculous. But
now, one thing about this episode, and this is probably the first time, I actually haven't seen the art that you've done for the Takeshita and the Uemura match. So I don't even know what moment in particular stood out to you or what your takeaways from that match were.
Damn, well, I better upload this to the chat as we speak. I don't wanna spoil things here until you see it. But I really struggled on this one. I went back and forth on a few different possible moments. But here you go. This should be coming through momentarily. But yeah, I really do. Oh, hang on, did that work?
Yeah, I think so. It's asking me to accept something.
I may have sent the AI file instead. Yeah, I think I did. Hang on. There we go. There's the correct one. Very professional here, as everyone has come to expect. But, yeah, so obviously with the match, and, you know, we'll get a bit more into this now, I guess, but the working over the arms... I think was a key part of the story. So if you see that one here, I think that moment, you know, where he had like was struggling and had him like locked in that like double overhook, and that moment of struggle of Takeshita really like, you know, trying to like bow up and like power out of it, but you know, selling the arms, and then that obviously becoming a key part of the finish as well. I just really love that, and I love the whole story of the way he, like, you know, was working over one arm earlier in the match, and then, you know, he came back and you know did the forearm to the post, and then his right arm is then, you know, fucked as well. So then both of his arms are kind of screwed, and they're like two of his greatest weapons. And yet, you know, he's still trying to kind of struggle on through. I really thought that was something special in terms of just an isolated story. Something kind of simple, I guess, when you think about it, but and it just working so well into the finish. I just thought it was so darn satisfying.
I love this art. I'm always a big fan of what you do, but what I like about this one in particular is because a lot of the art that you do, the mat, the ring ropes, they're definitely like distinctively stylized by you, but you can't necessarily tell just by looking at the photo, like, where the fuck is this happening or what time frame is it? But this one, like, you went out of your way to include the cerulean blue with the white outline for the mat. You can see the Japanese style, like, boxing turnbuckles with the logo. Like, I fucking love that because I'm like, oh, okay, I know exactly what this is. This is fucking New Japan. The Shinnihon right here.
Yeah, I mean, there is something so iconic about that that blue mat. And, I really wanted to make sure to try to capture that because, you know, if it is capturing the G1, I want it to be as distinctive as possible. That was a key part of it. And then, yeah, the other bit was like trying to make it, I guess, a part of the match that captures the story of the match.
Mm-hmm.
The other awesome visual that I was tossing up between going with was that that double overhook suplex in question, the big it's the deadbolt, right?
Out of the corner, yeah.
Yeah, coming out of the corner like that, you know, ram him into the corner like bloody Scott Steiner and then like capture it straight up. I thought that just came off so well and it was a very cool, interesting visual, you know, the way he looks when he's bridging it because like his head kind of like disappears in the bridge and like the foreshortening of it. I thought it was a very interesting visual and maybe a bit more dynamic than this one possibly. But, I mean, the reason I settled on this, I guess, was because, yeah, I thought it captured what was my favourite part of that story of the match, I guess.
Yeah.
And I was quite satisfied because I was talking to Brad about it the other day and he couldn't quite remember what, you know, match it was, but then he saw the illustration and he was like, oh, it's the arm match.
The arm match, yeah.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy. Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to BadlandsRanch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to BadlandsRanch.com/save50 today.
Yeah, we had seen, you know, a couple things leading into that match. There have been some very good, it was early in the tournament, and there had already been some very good matches that were very much like New Japan House style with some of the established talent. Tsuji and Takeshita had a great match on night one as well. But what a lot of the good matches that were happening were, they were just like, you know, kind of Rock'em Sock'em Robots, big never style matches, big strike exchanges, escalating moves, you know, guys taking a move, they both sell down, then a big move, they both sell down, they're trying to pin each other, and like not a lot of nuance to that. And I trust me, I love myself a spot fest, but what was great about this match was like the story of it combined with the action, like you were saying. And I loved the idea that like Takeshita up to this point had almost been like an unbeatable juggernaut. Uemura had kind of been seen in some circles as the least performing of the Reiwa generation guys coming back from excursion, and he got the big win over Finley the night before, you know,
I really enjoyed that one. I thought that was my favorite Finley match in the tournament, by the way.
Yeah, and he's the global champion, so that was a big deal. And then for him to turn around on this night, I was like, well, he's definitely gonna lose to Takeshita's just running through everybody. And you know, Takeshita really embodies that modern like DDT style that was popularized with, like, you know, Endo and, you know, Kenny Omega and Ibushi. And he's like almost to the next level as far as an athlete, even beyond those guys, as crazy as that sounds. And kind of bringing that bombastic style to New Japan. And then to see Uemura, who's just like so classic Puro, so Fujinami, so Ricky Steamboat, like just very, very, very beautiful, classical, technical type of work. And for him to kind of meld his style against his and kind of withstand the bombardment that is Takeshita and go after the arms and utilize like his technique and take every advantage and use his fighting spirit and outlast Takeshita and then fucking pin him. Like, incredible story. Like, I still think for my money, the best match of the tournament is probably ELP Takeshita, just to my taste, but
right.
This is the best story of the tournament, and it's top two or top three of the whole thing. Like, it's incredible.
Oh, special mention in terms of story, and this might be foreshadowing, you know, what might be coming for the next match of the week, possibly. But that that Zach Gabe match, I thought the story.
I knew you were going to say that match. And you know what? I think Gabe even more than Uemura has done more to elevate his stock in this tournament than any other young guy.
Yeah. Fantastic. I mean, that, like, Shingo match as well. Oh my gosh.
He's had some incredible performances and, you know, done it in a totally different way than all the other guys in the tournament. But yeah, the Zach match, Jeremy Donovan, my co-host on Keeping a Strong Style, he likened that match to WrestleMania 13 with Brett and Stone Cold. And I was like, in a certain way, that is pretty apt when you think about, like, who's the best technical wrestler in the company? Who's the, you know, the outlandish guy that's on the verge of breaking through and sort of like an outlaw? Like, very, that match very much represents that sort of feud.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I thought that, yeah, having to last through, or Zach having to last through this, you know, bombardment of crazy offense and the chops and everything from Gabe to then, you know, turn that into, you know, targeting the I think it was the arm, wasn't it? It was a bit of a while since I've seen it, but man, I adored that. I thought that was so cool.
I'm really pulling for Zach to win this tournament.
Oh, yeah,
it's so unlikely. But I want him to win so bad.
I mean, I was originally hoping for Zach and Uemura in the final. I don't know, again, whether that would have happened, but man, that would have been awesome.
Yeah, we'll see. You know, the thing is with New Japan, they rarely ever have a foreigner in the final, much less, I mean, they've only, for their big, you know, tournament, and you know me, I go beyond the G1 days. I go back to, like, you know, the MSG League and shit like that. They've only had three foreigners ever win their big tournament, and that's Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant, and Kenny Omega.
Yeah.
So it's like, are they going to put Zach in that echelon? Like, I don't know if they see him that way. I don't know if they see him as a guy that can headline the dome with Naito, but I would love it. I want it so bad.
Oh, same. Absolutely. And I was thinking about this whole sort of like outsiders thing, you know, like from the perspective of like a non, you know, signed New Japan talent, you know, going to the end of the tournament. And I was like, man, it's the last time an actual outsider went to the finals of the G1, bloody Rick Rude?
No, there have been technically two.
Ooh, who? This I'm glad I get to talk to you about this. I'm fascinated.
So I don't remember the specific year. I think it's 03-04, Jun Akiyama versus Tenzan was the final, which is one of the classic G1 finals. Also, I mean, in 01, when Muto wrestled Nagata in the finals, that was almost All Japan versus New Japan, even though, like, Muto had just defected, like, he barely had a foot in the company at that point, you know?
Yeah.
The other time that they had a foreigner or outsider, I should say, was in 2010 when Kojima wrestled Tanahashi. But Kojima had just, I mean, obviously he's a New Japan guy. You know, he came from the dojo and he wasn't with All Japan anymore. He was like, quote unquote, freelancing. And he signed with the company.
He sort of came back, right?
Right, he signed with them immediately after winning the G1, but he was technically viewed as an outsider, and he did beat Tanahashi in the finals in 2010.
Right.
And that's the last time they very rarely have had. I mean, I think the furthest an outsider has gone in the tournament in modern times was like Marufuji got to the B Block finals against Okada in like 2016.
Mm-hmm. I remember that one.
And they haven't done it since then.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the more I think about it, I don't think it would necessarily behoove them to have a guy that's not with them full-time going to the finals of the tournament, you know what I mean? Like, I kind of would want to see them be building things more around guys that are going to be there full-time to carry the company going forward.
Yeah, you know, I actually thought that he's lost too many times in the tournament. And I think for some New Japan fans, that sort of endeared him because they don't feel that overreach of Tony Khan on the booking side of things and feeling like a guy's being shoved down their throat. But for me, I'm more of like thinking in a classical booking sense. And I'm like, if he's lost three or four times, then whoever beats him at the end of the tournament doesn't get that big a rub. That's why it was such a big deal when Umar was the first one to do it. But he's lost like three other times in the tournament. He's going to lose a fourth time. So it's like, it's not as special. If I'd had the book personally, he would have won the block. He would have maybe dropped one, maybe two losses. But realistically, I'd probably only have him drop the one. And I know some people are like, oh, well, you know, you're just protecting an AEW guy. But my thinking is like, whoever he loses to, whether that's in the knockout round or in the finals, they should get the rub from beating that big star, you know? And it's not going to really be so much that now, at this point, the way they booked it.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that if you are going to have someone put someone over and try to make it a big deal, like, you really should be putting him over strong beforehand for it to mean anything.
Right. I do think for, you know, looking at who's in the A and the B block finals, if you were just like, what's the best work ratey match, like the one that would produce the most fireworks, it's going to be Shingo and Takeshita. They've never wrestled at all in any, like, ever, not even in multi-man matches or anything. And I think that that's the best, like, style matchup. but I don't count on that being the final in any way, shape, or form. I think of the six guys they have, though, if any variation between Zach, Shingo, Takeshita, and Tsuji will be a work rate classic. As long as Finley and Ocon are not in that final, then we're good to go. Not, and I don't even hate those guys. I'm fans of theirs. It's just there's tiers here, and there's a certain level of expectation when it comes to the G1 final. And like, I don't think either of those guys can do that, really.
Yeah, I mean, I would have said the same thing about Goto. I was just talking to cousin Ben about the first G1 that I remember watching at the time, like all the way through, and pretty much watching the whole thing. And it was the only one that Goto won with that final against Makabe. I don't know if it was like 2008, 2009, somewhere around that time.
That was Makabe versus who?
Goto.
Goto. Oh, yeah. Okay.
And at that time, I was very much doubting that Goto was capable of that, you know, because he was still a bit on the younger side and hadn't really proven himself all that much. And he surprised me big time. And then ever since, I've been a big, big time Goto fan. I mean, especially this year.
People are so upset that he didn't get into the knockout rounds. Like, he was garnering so much fan support. I can't remember the last time Goto had this much support. It probably had to be like 2016 or 2015, something like that. Like, it's been almost a decade since he's had this kind of hype behind him.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think it would have been a really cool thing if Goto had have gotten to those final rounds. It would have been a really special, emotional kind of deal for the crowd if he did.
I was almost tempted to attempt my own artwork on this one just to kind of keep up the tradition.
Oh, dude, I would love that.
But I didn't find the time. Oh, man.
That's okay. Next time.
I do want to do another one in the future. Soon. I'll figure one out.
please. Well, it's like I said, it's likely that there's going to be another G1 edition for this next week's version. So I don't know. See how you go with your time.
Bro, you gotta do the one with Zach on what's his face's back and him, his like face all budging and popping out and turning red and shit, you know?
Oh man, there's so many good visuals in that match. Yeah, definitely gonna have to do a frame by frame of that one and make the big pick. But who knows what it's gonna be? Who knows what it's gonna be? No surprises here. Could be a complete different match.
I'm telling you what it needs to be. It could be. Also, with them both sitting cross-legged and slapping each other, that's another really great moment in that match.
Yep. Yeah, for sure.
But I'm looking forward to it. You know, we're in the final week of G1 here, and I know probably not everybody that's listening watches New Japan or watches the G1, but it's been an incredible tournament, the best in at least 5 or 6 years. And
I agree.
I don't know where we're going with this final, but I think it's going to be really good.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I think it's been super fresh. In recent years, I just experienced so much fatigue of like, oh, here's another Okada match. Even dude like Ospreay, you know, Ospreay can do some wild shit, but like, I just had such fatigue watching him over and over and over, or, you know, like the bloody dudes that have just been around forever doing the same old thing, like Yano. I mean, this is the first one where it just really felt like a bunch of new guys, different dynamics, and it just felt like so fresh, and I'm here for that. I mean, except for bloody the lack of Ishii. I'm very sad about that, to be honest.
I'm so pissed about that. I hate that because it's like, okay, the whole thing was like, hey, Ishii can't do it. His body can't hold up these days. I'm like, okay, that makes sense. But he's working in the States every week. Like, what the fuck are we talking about? he's working multiple times per week for Tony Khan. Like, why? I had to sit through a Jake Lee tournament because Ishii's body can't hold up, is what I've been told.
I thought you might be coming out here besmirching the good name of Jake Lee.
No.
I am a Jake Lee defender, man. I am a Jake Lee defender. He has... I know a lot of people out here hating on this run that he's had in the G1, but man, I think these people just don't understand Jake Lee. He has had a fantastic time in Noah. I absolutely loved his run with the GHC Heavyweight Championship. That thing was fantastic, you know, from the awesome matches against like Marufuji, Kaito, Go, the big one where he dropped it against Kenno. Bloody fantastic stuff. And I think a big part of this New Japan run is they're just trying to kind of change him. And they're trying to get a bit of a different kind of version of Jake Lee out of that. And there's some teething issues with that. But, you know, I mean, I watched the Naito match and I'm not going to defend that.
That match was bad. That was so bad.
I mean, it wasn't great, but, like, we went on and got that incredible Zack Sabre Jr. match. Like, that right there is my Jake Lee.
No, I hated that match. I'm surprised that he... surprised to hear that he had a good Noah run, considering Kento Miyahara wasn't there to carry him to four plus star matches every night, you know? I'm surprised.
Oh, yeah. We listened to the bloody Dave-isms. Fuck.
Oh man, no, I'm not a fan of Jake Lee. I don't think that anything that's happened in this tournament. But I am an open-minded man. I'm not dug in, and if things turn around, I'll turn around on him. But I personally, bro, I mean, I don't know that this is confirmed, but I don't think he's really with New Japan. I think this is a storyline, and you know, the scuttlebutt is that he might just be going back to Noah when the tournament's over.
I mean, I hope that's the case. I would like to see that happen.
Me too. I really hope that's the case.
I guess it works for everyone concerned then. works for us fans, works for you guys. It's great.
Oh man. So with you being kind of up to date, what do you think these last knockout rounds are going to look like? Who are you predicting go through?
Well, I mean, my guy is Zach. I mean, that's pretty much already sorted, right? Like, with the points and everything, it looks like Zach for sure will be in the final.
Yeah, so it's Shingo.
As much as he's a gaijin and everything like that.
It's Shingo and Okan. Winner of that faces Zach. Whoever wins that is the A block winner. And then it's Tsuji versus Takeshita. Winner of that faces Finley. And whoever wins that faces the winner of A block.
Ooh, interesting. Man, so there's part of me that kind of expects Tsuji to go all the way through to the final. And, you know, you say you're not a Jake Lee fan. I'm not a Tsuji fan.
that is so crazy.
He's just, I don't know, he's just like missing.
For you specifically, Chris, that is so crazy.
Like, to me, he has some cool, like, flashy stuff, but, I mean, between that, you know, it's like the substance of the wrestling, mm-hmm. like the actual, you know, grappling, the in-between. I mean, compared to a guy like Uemura, I feel like he's worlds behind.
I could see that.
And, yeah, I think, I don't know, part of it's like Uemura has that amateur wrestling background and he doesn't. I mean, what, he comes from, like, rugby or something?
American football.
Right. And yeah, I mean, something is a little, like, I feel like he sometimes just doesn't hit hard enough for my liking. You know, big dude like that, I want him to hit hard. And yeah, I just don't think, you know, compared to some of these other guys, he doesn't seem to wrestle with as much heart. I guess that's probably the main thing.
I totally can see where you're coming from. I don't think he's a finished product by any means. I think that there are still some holes to shore up in his game, but he's basically a giant Japanese luchador. It's fucking awesome.
I mean, yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think he has loads of potential. You know what I mean?
Right.
I think he definitely has the tools, but it's still, like you're saying, in a work in progress, to where I just don't think he's quite there yet. So then I look at him in the finals of this tournament, I'm like, ooh, I don't quite know about that. But then I look at the, you know, these blocks, and I'm like, he would be the one that you would assume to go through. So, I mean, you think?
I think so. The thing is, he's... Okay, so, like, this is the way I see it. They're definitely, for sure, Okan is not going to be in the final. So, he might get through...
I don't think so.
No, he might get through Shingo, but he's not going to get to the final. If it's him and Zach, Zach wins. So I'm thinking they're probably going to do Shingo wins, and then it'll be Shingo, Zach.
I would love that.
As far as the B block, I could definitely see Finley getting through, but only if the person he's wrestling is beating him. And the only one that makes sense is him versus Shingo, because they're never going to do an all-foreigner G1 final. So they're never going to do Finley and Zach. That's not possible. So I think if Finley and Shingo go through, Shingo's winning the entire G1, which would kind of make sense. There's a lot of smart people I listen to that think that's exactly what we're getting. I think Takeshita could be in the finals against either Zach or Shingo, but I really doubt he would win the tournament. I think he would just be there as the guy to the outsider who's dynamic to put over one of those two guys. But personally, for me, the one that makes the most sense from B block is, I think Tsuji already lost to Takeshita on night one. So I think he's going to beat Takeshita to get that revenge. He also had a series of matches earlier this year with Finley. And so I think he kind of needs to kind of put a final stamp on that feud. He'll get through. And then I don't know who's going to win. I think it's either going to be Tsuji versus Shingo or Tsuji versus Zach. And I kind of think the A block guy's winning regardless. So I think it's either going to be Zach or Shingo taking home the gold and headlining the Dome this year.
Yeah, yeah, I do think that would be absolutely awesome. I could see, Zach and Tsuji. I think that'd be an interesting dynamic, but, you know, I don't know about Tsuji, but I mean, Zach has awesome matches with everybody, so yeah, I can see it. But yeah, I mean, I did think it was weird. I remember hearing a little while back, Zach had like a media thing where he said that if he doesn't win the entire G1 and the IWGP Championship at Tokyo Dome, his career is a failure.
Right.
And I'm like, that's a bit of a bombastic statement if you're not winning the whole thing.
Well, you know, I would agree, but I remember literally being in a press conference in Dallas in 2019. And after hearing the comments that Naito had made that day, I was walking out of there and I was like, there's no way he's saying the shit he's saying if he's not winning this fucking tournament. I was like, he's for sure winning the tournament. And he did not win that tournament. And so, you know, wrestlers are workers. You just never know. I don't take anything they say at face value. But, you know, they really have protected Zach this year in quite a few ways. They gave him that huge win over Danielson. I don't know what the fuck that was even for, if they don't have some sort of plan to belt him up. And, you know, there is no other Gaijin top guy at the current time. I mean, Kenny left, Will left, Jay White left. They sort of have that hole to fill. And, you know, I know a lot of people are calling for one of these young guys to be the one that gets the torch passed to them. But, you know, the way I liken it, I look at All Japan in 1990 and it's like, sure, you got Jumbo, but you need a Gordy and a Hansen at the same time. You know, they need some other archetype guy to be there to guide these young guys through. And I think that's Zach. I think he needs this win and I think he needs the title.
Yeah, yeah, I do think that the title going to Zach is a really good idea. You know, like him having a tear of a run with that strap, and then dropping it to whoever at that point is going to be your top young guy to carry the company going forward. I mean, Zach has like a special thing where he's not just a gaijin, you know, and you saw that like in the match with Gabe. It's like the Japanese fans kind of look at him and it's kind of like he's our gaijin, you know, he's more right. than that. He's got the you know, the heart of the Japanese fans.
Yeah, almost, not quite, but like almost like Terry Funk.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, when I think about that dynamic, absolutely beloved gaijin in Japan, like, you can't go past Terry.
I think we're not supposed to say that word anymore, I was told, but I don't know. I try to learn the other word, the Gaido Jukin or whatever. I can't learn it.
Gaikokujin.
Gaikokujin, yeah. I'm like, that's so much harder.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
you know, I'm not Japanese. It's not offensive to me.
I know, right? I mean, it's always been gaijin. I mean, I talked to my Japanese pal over there, and he is like, the gaijin, that's what it is. So I don't know if it's just like white people over there that are more offended or what.
We have our annual awards, and we always award the top foreigner in the company. We call it the Gaijin of the Year Award, and some people have been like, you need to change that name. And I'm almost like, no, I don't want to. But one time we did have the Young Boy Award, which was like the top young lion in the company, and Alex Coughlin won it, and he reached out to us, and he's like, fucking change that name to Young Lion of the Year. He didn't want it to be called Young Boy anymore, so we changed it.
Oh man. Damn.
We didn't want the heat, so you know.
It's so good. Oh man. I'm happy with this episode. We didn't like necessarily go like in depth on this match. But I don't think we need to. I think it's good to sort of break it up to kind of sometimes do a bit more of a Cliff Notes thing of it. But one thing that I did want to add to it was, I think the setting of it was a key part of another thing that made it special for me. So obviously we have a lot of these matches that are in your big towns, and you know, your Osaka or Korakuen or you know, the new Yokohama Budokan venue, all that very cool atmosphere kind of venues. This match didn't take place in one of those big cities. This match took place in Takamatsu, Kagawa, in front of like barely 1,000 fans, I think. But man, it was fantastic. I think these smaller sort of town shows really add something really kind of special to it, you know. And I think, man, these fans really lucked into something special with this main event. I thought that was really cool and added something.
Yeah, that's something that makes G1 special. I mean, these people, they pay for their ticket months in advance, and they don't necessarily know the lineup. They don't know what they may or may not see, but G1 is clearly a step above, you know, Road to Destruction Night 4, you know, with a bunch of tag matches. So it's nice when some of these more rural areas and these gymnasiums can actually see an all-time classic like that. They don't have to go to Tokyo. They don't have to be in Korakuen. So that's always awesome. The last thing I'll say before we, you know, do plugs and stuff, you know, I've always been a fan of your work, and I've always thought, like, damn, I want to have one of Chris's, you know, pieces of art, but I'm so indecisive, I don't know which one I want. And I'm still kind of there, but seeing this one with the cerulean blue, I'm like, fuck, whatever it is, I need to it needs to be something like this. This is awesome, seeing the actual like New Japan mat and ropes and everything like represented. Like, that's sick.
Oh, dang, dude, thank you, I appreciate that. Yeah, I am quite proud of this week's match of the week illustration. Like I said, I wanted to try to capture a distinct New Japan G1 vibe about it, so I'm glad I had that appeal. But yeah, I really did, you know, struggle with that actual picking the moment bit. And I even reached out to cousin Ben for the, you know, the final opinion. He actually went with the other one. But it, you know, once I ran this by him and explained why, he was like, oh yeah, well that works too. Thanks, Ben.
I need to shout out cousin Ben, because almost nobody is more supportive of me on social media than cousin Ben. anytime he sees a story or a post like of my dog or like my girlfriend or whatever, like, he's always hearting it. You know, I need to shout him out. You know, it's been too long since I've seen you guys, but you know, big shout out to cousin Ben.
Oh, absolutely. Cousin Ben, he is a sweetheart for sure. Very supportive. And might I say also very supportive of all my stuff too. Every post or, you know, event that I'm doing coming up that I'm plugging, Ben's always the first one to you know, like it or whatever, say something supportive. So, yeah. And Ben is honestly, he's more on this the New Japan stuff and keeping up with the G1 than even me. Like, he is the one that I'm a lot of the time getting, like, recommendations from. So, yeah, shout out to Cousin Ben.
Awesome. Well, it's been a blast and a pleasure being on the show once again. I guess I should throw some plugs out there. So if anybody who's listening made it,
Plugskies.
If you guys made it this far and you don't know who I am, my name's Josh. I'm the young boy, co-host of Keeping It Strong Style, part of the Social Suplex Podcast Network. We just recently changed our logo, so out with the Okada, in with the Tanahashi from Wrestle Kingdom 3. We are doing Patreon now, so for anybody that's a regular listener, we've got three tiers. So on the first tier, I think it's $1, you get ad-free audio weekly, which is a nice little bonus. At the $5 tier, you get bonus audio weekly from us, as well as the ad-free audio. And then for the $10 subscribers, I think that's the IWGP level. Not only do you get all those added benefits, but you also get live feed of our episodes, raw and uncut, with live video each and every single week, which has been a blast. Tons of subscribers and listeners are jumping in and, you know, chatting with us and adding their comments and watching the show live as it's taking place. So that's been an added thing. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at KI Strong Style. We drop on every single listening app that's out there that you listen to your podcasts on. We're Keeping It Strong Style, the longest single running weekly episodic New Japan podcast. We cover everything in the world of New Japan. It's usually like 3 hours, but it's just once a week, so you can break it up all throughout the week, and we cover all the news, show reviews, previews, literally everything. So and we've been rolling big time lately, especially with all this G1 coverage, and we're going to keep going.
Love it. That was a heck of a plug, man. You really have a professionalism when you're running through these things.
I'm a salesperson, you know?
Unlike myself, who's struggling to remember all of the show names.
You're like, there's a tunnel talk or something.
I still feel like that's keeping it honest, you know? If I can actually get them all committed to memory, that's more honest than me just reading them off a plug sheet, so...
I just started a new job, so I'm very behind on my listening. So I'm probably like a month and a half back on your episodes, including almost everybody's. But the last time I listened, you got all the shows. So,
well, sometimes it works. It's always my state of mind. You know, if I'm like in a clear-headed space, I'm like, yeah, great. If I'm in like a, you know, just having finished a solo show, or, you know, had some sort of big event or week away, I'm working, I'm like, my brain's just fried. But, you know, at the end of the day, I feel like there's an honesty there, and people can feel that. So... anyway, thank you.
Well, awesome. Well, Chris, thanks.
Thanks so much, dude.
Yeah, no, thank you for having me on again, and look forward to the next time, and maybe we'll do some more art.
Yeah, dude, I would love that. Honestly, please, next time you feel like drawing something up, I would adore that. I thought it was really cool the way we got to do that last one where we. You know, both had our sort of like versions of the illustration there for the podcast artwork. So yeah, anytime you feel like doing that again, that'd be rad. And yeah, definitely look forward to
by the way, yeah. The Instagram post that we had that was shared with that, it's not working anymore.
Yeah, I noticed it got like grayed out or something. I don't know why.
Okay, I wasn't sure if that was just on my side or if that, I didn't know what happened there.
Yeah, I don't know whether it was like the Instagram algorithm thought there was something funky going on and they flagged it, but isn't that quite strange? It hadn't happened with one of my other podcast artworks.
It's like weird. It's still there, but it says can't load image, like tap to retry, but I don't know why. I'm like...
bizarre. Well, oh, if it happens again... Well, no, they just have something against Josh Smith Hart on Instagram, apparently.
Yeah, they're fucking with us. They don't care.
These motherfuckers. Oh, all right, my dude. But yeah, thanks so much. I definitely look forward to having you back in the near future, maybe even our next episode if your time works, and if there happens to be some more G1 goodness in the match of the week.
We will see. Well, thank you for having me on, and I'll talk to you guys later.
Rad. Thanks, my dude. Well, you have a good night.
All right. Talk to you later, Chris.
All right. Man, that was really fun. Like I said, I really dig getting to talk to Josh because we sort of cover all of the New Japan, you know, kind of latest goss. I feel like Josh is certainly has a lot of great insight about that. I highly recommend everyone check out Keeping It Strong Style. Great show. I honestly, like, sometimes I just get so busy and I don't get a chance to get around to it, but every time I do, it's fantastic, and I just love picking at Josh's ear to sort of see what he's thinking's going on, what he thinks of things, even if he is a big old Jake Lee hater. I don't know. I wonder if anyone else out there, listening might be on that same boat. But I maintain, you buddy, check out his Noah stuff. All of the criticisms that you hear, I think, are heavily unfounded. I really deeply appreciate Josh's compliments of the art. I don't know if you'll notice it, but sometimes when people say nice things about my art, I get a bit weird. It's super nice. Sometimes it can be weird to take compliments, because I guess the most important thing to me is I want people to know that I really appreciate their kind words. Sometimes I don't know, I get a little bashful, or I don't know what it is, but it's certainly appreciated. if any of you all out there, dig this stuff that much that you would like to, get a printsky of it, framed up on your wall, you can do that. You can even just swing me a message and say, hey, Chris, I want that. I'll swing you some money on PayPal. Well, you can do it the official way by going to christhings.com.au, you jump on there. You can buy a print. You can buy that bad boy framed, ready to go. Prints available from just $25 dues, all the way up to my fancy premium ones. I do on fancy thick textured decadent stock. High quality archival grade prints that will last up to 100 years if stored correctly. you can buy all of those things. You can even buy t-shirts, what have yous, all the stuff. christhings.com.au. If you'd like to support, always appreciate the financial support there as a struggling artist. If you just dig in the show, thank you for listening, thank you for supporting that way. I count, honestly, if you all just listen to this show and that's that, maybe like some things, whatever it is, I'm hugely grateful. It still blows me away that people will spend their time listening to me ramble on in as silly fashion as I do. At that time in this lifetime is the most important resource we have. It's the one thing we're not getting back. So if you want to spend that time hearing me talk some nonsense about wrestling or wrestling art or whatever it is, I take that as a big compliment. But I appreciate you guys. I hope you are enjoying things. I had a lot of fun on that show. Gonna be getting back to all of the things as mentioned earlier. Coming up next we got some Lucha Fantastica, we got Wrestling Club the week after that, some exciting things on the horizon. I hope you guys are excited. I'd also like to say a big thank you to the network, Social Suplex, socialsuplex.com, where you can check out all of that goodness. You know, we have the Wrestling Art with Chris things, but we also have a variety of other shows, as Josh was mentioning, Keeping It Strong Style. We've got One Nation Radio, we've got Imps WWE Adventure, we've got the All Things Elite Show, Trish and Sarah Podcast, Tunnel Talk, quite a bit of stuff there. So if any of that sounds interesting, you jump on there. You can also search for Social Suplex and the podcast places, and you'll find all of the things. Great stuff. But for myself, if you do want to make sure you subscribe specifically to the Wrestling Art with Chris Things feed, that's good for me. If you ever feel like doing a little review ski, that also helps. I appreciate everyone out there in podcast land. I hope my rambling nonsense isn't too annoying. But yeah, I think this has been a good week, and I look forward to seeing you next week. Until then, farewell.
I do the hammerlock.